Without Walls Learning Community. This evening we will be discussing assistive technology, and the next hour has been designed to be informative, substantive, and extremely practical. In about 24 hours, this session will be available to listen to at any time from the website, from the Hidden Sparks website. You can either stream it live, that means listen to it at your computer, or you can download it and listen to it as a podcast at any time. In addition, the PowerPoint will also be available, and you can download that at any time as well for future reference. Immediately after today's conference call, you're going to receive a very short evaluation, which we would like you to complete. We review these evaluations very carefully, and your thoughts and reactions help shape the planning for future sessions. By now, you know that your phone is muted, so when you speak, no other webinar participants will hear you. This will allow us all to listen to the presentation without any background noise. In order to communicate throughout the session, you should feel free to use the chat room. That's at the extreme right-hand side of your computer screen. On the very bottom, there's a large window that says chat, and underneath that, there's a smaller window that allows you to type in, and you can click send, and that will send your question or comment to the whole group. Please make sure that your comment is posted to all participants. If your send to option does not say all participants, please just use the drop-down menu to click on all participants. Once you post your question or comment, we'll be sure to address it before the end of that slide in the PowerPoint. Feel free now to take some time and just post, if you haven't worked with it before, feel free to post a hello to people just to make sure that you know how to use it. During tonight's session, the presenter may ask for a show of hands or a check mark or an X. Those can be found in the middle of that right-hand side area, just above a button that says audio, there's a hand raised. And beside that, a green check mark, and then beside that, a red X. If you'd like to try that out, you can click on each of those. Click it once to raise your hand. Click it once again to take it away. I can see people are trying it with great success. Thank you. So if the presenter asks for a show of hands or an X or a check mark, you can click on those. At the end of the session tonight, the phone lines will be opened for people who might want to ask a question verbally, so we'll have some time at the very end for that. And we do ask that at that point you really make sure that you're speaking from a quiet room, on a not on a speakerphone, because we pick up a lot of background noise from that. And please be sure that you've followed all of the etiquette by disabling your call waiting. Do not put the conference call on hold. That might create some hold music for the other listeners. When you're asking a question or making a comment in the chat box, please be sure to follow the these guidelines. If you're speaking to another participant, only use your first names. If discussing a student, please only use first names or a pseudonym to protect his or her privacy. And you should feel free to identify yourself with your first name when you begin speaking at the very end of the call. And now we're ready to begin tonight's session. I'm delighted to introduce our guest, Shannon Stringer. Shannon is currently the head of technology integration at the Churchill School, a K-12 non-public school serving children with learning disabilities. She received her master's in education from Teachers College and her master's in special education from Hunter College, and has taught technology and technology integration to students and teachers for K-12 for 20 years, mainly at the Churchill School and Center. Shannon believes that technology is a powerful tool for collaboration and learning for teachers and students alike. I'm also delighted to introduce our technological co-facilitator, Betsy Kane, who will be working with Shannon. Welcome, Shannon and Betsy. And Shannon, you can take the floor.
Okay. Hi, everyone. I'm not letting me forward. There we go. We did test it out beforehand, but there's always technical glitches. So today I'm going to be covering a few basic things. I'm going to talk about what is assistive technology. We use the term a lot, but what do we actually mean by it? I'm going to talk about how it can be used to help input difficulties, output difficulties, and organizational difficulties, which are sort of three broad areas that you can divide these difficulties into. And then I'll do a brief review, hopefully we'll have time, that's organized in a different way where I talk about several devices and what they can be used for. So it's another way of sort of cutting the same data. Hopefully, I'll also provide you with some guidelines for looking at these assistive technologies, which is sort of your bag of tricks, and then moving on and looking at your student and thinking, okay, which of these tricks could help the student. So I've got two main session goals. Number one is to become familiar with the types of assistive technology that are currently available. And then the second one is to develop a framework for figuring out which tools you could try with a student and what ones might make sense. Before I go into it, I'm going to be throwing a lot of names and programs and devices at you. Every single one of them is listed with links in the last three slides of this PowerPoint. So don't go crazy trying to take notes or if you miss the name of something, because all of that will be available on the Hidden Sparks site when the PowerPoint is posted. And you'll be able to see it, I assume, at the end of the session. I can, you know, pause on those slides if you want to. So let's start with, what is assistive technology? It's really just technology used in a specialized way. A lot of the things that we think of as assistive technology were actually developed not for learning disabled kids, but for busy executives or, you know, very powerful men who didn't want to bother typing their information and wanted people to be and wanted to be more productive. I really think that that's one of the things you also need to let kids know, that, you know, all these devices are really just technology. They're not something that we're using because they're different. We're just using them in a smart way. So I spoke before about three major areas that this is going to help in. We're going to talk about input, taking in and remembering information, reading, listening to lectures, watching a video, listening in class. Those are all input activities. Output activities is writing and other products. Unfortunately, in school, a lot of your output is still writing. It's for these kids, it's really nice to include things like oral presentations, videos, podcasts, slideshows, and other more visual or auditory products, so everything isn't about writing. Learning how to create media is going to be just as important as writing in the next 20 years. So, you know, it is not dumbing things down, it's teaching them a different kind of literacy. Organization and attention, we all need help with this. But keeping track of materials and assignments. And many kids have specific, it's called executive function difficulties, which render this really, really hard. And technology, as I have found personally, really can help make this work much better. Obviously, some tasks that you do require a combination of these. When you're listening to a lecture and taking notes, you're both involving input and output. When you're doing a long research paper that's due in 2 months, you're combining output and organization. So we'll be talking about some of those combination tasks too. When you're looking at these different areas and these different tasks, three major questions you always have to ask yourself. First, obviously, what technology could help the student with their task? And then, this is the real one. How much extra work for teacher and student is using this technology going to take? Because there's a learning curve on technology, and then some technology requires these students to, in their view, do extra work, which they do not want to do, even if it helps them do better work. So you have to structure the teaching and using of this technology in bite-sized pieces so that where you do some scaffolding, so that it isn't an overwhelming task to use the technology if you really think it's going to help them. And then finally, is this technology going to be useful in the student's future? Is this something you see them using forever? Or is it a short-term strategy? And as an example of that, if you have a younger kid who has been having reading difficulties, but you've just got them on track with an Orton-Gillingham approach and they're really moving forward with their reading, but their comprehension is still pretty high. So you want to have the computer read to them for comprehension work so that they don't fall behind in that area. But at some point, you're pretty sure the reading is going to catch up. It helps with the previous question, because if it's a long-term strategy that you're going to use forever, then it's worth putting in a lot of time to teach kids. But if it's a shorter-term strategy, you might want to consider something that's a little less involved. Does that make sense? If anyone has any questions, I'm just going to wait for a sec to let people jump on. Okay, so we're going to move on to what I would call input difficulties. The first and obvious one is decoding text or reading. The second would be oral and or reading comprehension difficulties. And a third one would be processing information in a timely way, which is, you know, slow processing speeds, which some of our kids exhibit. And that's not to be confused with lower mental capacity, because some of the smartest kids I know are very slow processors, but when they get there, wow. So an input combined with output, which I mentioned earlier, note-taking from lectures or note-taking from text. So we're going to look at some technologies that help that. Often LD students can comprehend at a much higher level than they can decode. And so that's why I've separated out the decoding text from oral and reading comprehension, because they are really two very different activities. And if a child has real trouble decoding, their comprehension may go out the window because they're so focused on the task of just trying to decode. So that's something that you sort of keep in mind. There's also the occasional kid who's the reverse, who reads with amazing fluency and can tell you nothing about what they read. And occasionally we find kids like that. Can I see a show of hands? Do any of you work with kids who have big gaps between their decoding ability and their sort of reading comprehension? Okay, I love the sound effect with that. That's really cool. Okay. All right, so we're going to find some ways that we can help these kids. So here's some piece of technology that can help with reading. The first one is, this is the first real piece of actual made for learning disabled kids assistive technology. This is a program that can work on a computer, it can work on an iPad or an Android tablet, and it can work with the web or with word processing programs. It's called Read and Write Gold, and there's another one called Kurzweil. It does what we call text-to-speech. It does text-to-speech. Read and Write Gold in particular is very flexible. Basically, anything that shows up on a screen, it can read to you. And then they have other functions as well, which I'll go into further on. But that's a really neat one. iPods and MP3 players for audiobooks. A lot of the students at Churchill, for their language, for their ELA classes and for, you know, reading comprehension type activities, will listen to an audiobook rather than reading the book. Mac or Windows OS both have a basic text-to-speech function, so you can turn that on in accessibility. And I have tagged where you can go to get instructions for that in the notes at the end, so I'm skipping it now because there's very good web resources for that. And then finally, the Kindle, the Nook, and the iPad all have some read-aloud functionalities, as well as interactive dictionaries, which is nice. And interestingly, since all of them support audio and sort of textbooks, you can actually have a kid listening to the audiobook and following along in the written book, which can be very helpful for some kids to help them focus a little better. I don't know how many of you listen to audiobooks, but I find it, unless I'm doing some sort of repetitive, mindless task that's keeping my body busy, I cannot listen to an audiobook. My mind just wanders off. So unless I'm knitting or walking or hiking or something, audiobooks don't really work for me. But I know a lot of our students at Churchill use them a great deal. So let's look at some of these in a little more detail. This is what Read and Write Gold looks like. This is a toolbar that shows up. So it has all sorts of different functions, as you can see. But the Read button is basically, let me get the little arrow here, is basically right here. And it's the little green arrow, just like a regular play button. And when you hit play, it starts at the beginning of the page that it's on and keeps going. It highlights, you can set it up where it highlights a sentence or it highlights a paragraph, and then the particular word it is reading is highlighted in a different color. And you can choose the color. You can choose to turn it off if it's distracting to kids. But they can pause or stop altogether if it's going too fast. So they have a lot of control over what speed it's being read to them. Now, the one sort of additional piece to that is, yes, it is the computer voice, but they're a lot better than they used to be. And Read and Write Gold actually comes with a few that are really quite good. It also has a piece where if you're reading a piece on, say you're doing ancient world studies and you have a lot of terminology like Mesopotamia or names of Nebuchadnezzar or something like that, there's a pronunciation place where you can put correct pronunciations in for those words so that those words are read correctly. So it's a pretty powerful tool. And it can be very complicated or it can be really easy. We use it with very young children because they can just click play and listen to it. And we also show our older kids some of the more sophisticated features so that they can use it better. Another feature it does have, which you can use, is you can take a passage, and it can be a fairly lengthy one, and convert it to an MP3 file. So it's almost like an automatic podcast instead of you reading the whole thing yourself into a podcast for the kid to listen to, which a lot of teachers at Churchill do as well. Another piece that you should know about, if you're going to use text-to-speech technology, one of the most complicated pieces, and if you're dealing with younger kids, you as the adult need to figure this part out, is how to get digital text that they can read. And these two are government-sponsored agencies. They're there because of IDEA, the Individuals with Disabilities in Education Act, and they are there if your child has documented reading disabilities and you have a medical statement to that effect or you have a medical person attest to that, you can get access to these free digital texts. And Bookshare will literally take any textbook or any book you have and convert it to digital text that is readable by these text-to-speech machines. Learning Ally used to be Reading for the Blind and Dyslexic, and they create free audio versions of texts. And they have many, most of these companies have thousands of titles already done, and they tend to do, any New York Times bestsellers they already have on file and most major textbooks. So those are really good resources that are kind of a pain to get enrolled in, but once you're enrolled, they really give you a lot of free text. Again, this is one that you probably don't want to get into unless you think this is going to be a permanent issue for your student. But if you do, it's well worth it. Does anyone have any questions about that? That was a lot of information. Oh, that's a great one. Can you use the Read with Gold program in different languages? I believe at this point it's for English. If it is a English-based language, like it's written in Anglic text, so it's not Arabic or Israeli or something like that, then you could probably, it would probably work reasonably well, but it's not going to read French with a French accent. That's part of the problem, that it's learned to recognize these characters and provide the English interpretation of what those letters mean. So it would be like an American reading French, I am anticipating. and I don't know. That's a great question. I will research into it and get that, hopefully get that to the guys at Hidden Sparks, and they can add it to the end of the program if there are text-to-speech possibilities in other languages. Because I know for a fact, I was just talking to a friend of mine today that she says there is not one available for Hebrew at this point. So those are two pieces that come into play a lot, and it comes into play a lot, especially as kids get older, because there's more and more reading component to what they are required to process. Taking notes. Notes really require a whole additional set of skills because they are a combination of input and output. So poor spellers, dyslexic and dysgraphic students, slow processors, and students with different kinds of language disorder all have trouble taking notes. And taking notes from a lecture is very different than taking notes from a text, because a lecture moves along. And if you're a slow processor or dysgraphic or worried about your spelling and don't write very well or have horrible writing that you can't read, a lecture is much harder to take notes from. So we'll sort of discuss the two differently. Simple. Use your smartphone or your iTouch or some kind of MP3 recorder and record a lecture. Most of those have like nice little fast forwards, so you can find the spot where you didn't understand and listen again. The Smart Pen is a really interesting tool for taking notes more efficiently, and it's got the benefit if it has, and I'll keep explaining it more, but it can be used very simply or it can be much more complicated, so it's a lot of fun. And finally, an iPad with a stylus or a keyboard. And there are several apps out there that allow you to record while you're taking notes. And it kind of tracks where you're taking notes and what the audio is, so you can click around. So that's a neat piece of technology for that. For taking notes while reading text, Read, Write, and Gold and Kurzweil. And there's a Don Johnson program called Read Aloud. I think it also has a gold in the name. They let you bring the text in, and you can highlight the text and take notes that way. So you're highlighting, but then it puts it in another document for you so that you've got a sort of condensed version to look at. Another one, if any of you use ebook readers, they have highlight functions as well. So this is the Smart Pen, and this is probably the most challenging one to explain if any of you have not used one. First, there's a notepad that looks completely traditional. There's a pen that actually comes out of this holder, and it looks just like a fat pen. It actually takes notes. This is just ink being put on this paper. The paper itself has microdots on it, and the pen itself, in the very tip of it, has a micro camera. So it records exactly what it is writing and where it is writing it in some internal memory. At the same time as you're taking these notes, you can, down here on the paper, there are some visual sort of command buttons. So you can tell the pen to start recording audio, and then to stop recording audio. You can listen to the audio while you're actually sitting there, and it has a earbuds that you can, so you're not disturbing the whole class. So you can listen back to a little section if you get a chance for a break. But, you know, especially like this drawing shows a really good example that when you know, you're in a chemistry class or a, this looks like a physics class, where the professor is sort of demonstrating an experiment or showing a movie, you can sort of draw a picture while it's happening, so you have the visual and the audio at the same time. And it's really powerful, because you can then, this is the really cool part, you can take your pen later in the quiet of your own home and click up here, and you'll hear what was being said when you took that note. And if you click down here, you will fast forward to what was being said when you drew that picture. So you, unlike a audio recording of the whole thing, you can be very precise about what you listen to where. So that's enormously cool, because you know, the kid is taking notes, he knows he didn't understand something, so he writes a word and then leaves a big blank, and he knows he's going to come back and listen to it and add some notes in. Even cooler than that is when you take, and this is where it gets complicated, when you take this pen home and put it in the dock, it transfers to your computer a complete copy of these notes, and if there's any audio recording, if you click with your mouse on that spot, it will play the audio recording, just like when you click on your notebook with your pen. So you also have the capability of storing all your lecture notes on your computer in case, as we know, some of our children might lose their notebook. And that is not the end of the world, because it's all stored on your computer. There's another feature to the notes on the computer, as a free part of buying a smart pen, you are allowed an account at LiveScribe, which is the company that makes them, home site, and they have what they call pencasts, which are kind of like podcasts, but they have the visual from the pens. So you can share your notes, or someone else can share your notes. I just got a question about what the cost of this is. These pens go for about $100. The software is completely free with the pen, and then you have to buy their special notebooks or print their special paper, which I would not recommend doing, because the notebooks are about $5 a piece. So that's, you know, that people complain that they have to buy this special paper, but I think it's well worth it. So that's the smart pen, and it's a genius tool that someone invented because they were tired of having a recording and a pile of notes and not having them link up. The person who recorded it also had an article in the New York Times Magazine a little while ago talking about brainstorming with this, that you can actually talk to the pen. So if you're in class and, you know, you have a brainstorm about something, or you're at home and you want to just talk things out, as you know our kids do, they can do it on the smart pen. The smart pen absolutely will work in any language. Good question. Because it's just a recording and a visual. So it will work in any language. There's even a limited capability to turn your writing into text, but that's a little tricky. So now that I've explained the smart pen, the iPad app will make a lot of sense. On the iPad, you can do the exact same thing with several apps. There's the one here is called Notability. The thing about the iPad is if you have a dysgraphic kid, they can type while it's recording. So, but the same thing works. When you tap on the spot where you were unclear, the recording jumps to the point at which you were typing that note. So if you have kids who like typing, that's a really good one. If you have a stylus or you're a pretty good drawer with your hand, you can also throw graphics in and things like that. So it works very similarly to the smart pen with the added benefit that you can type. So for some of our dysgraphic kids, it's a better product. I'm going to pause for a minute if anyone has any questions about these two note-takers. Otherwise, other than why didn't they have them when we were in college? Because I would have gotten much better grades. I know that. Again, to address the language question, the iPad would basically work in any language too, because it's just recording sound and your keystrokes. Okay. So we're going to move on to taking notes while you're reading. The screenshot here is the Kindle app on an iPad, but it pretty much works the same on a Kindle or even on a Kindle app on a computer. The Kindle is very generous with their apps. So what you can do is, I'm showing that I've got some highlights here. Those highlights show up over on the side, so you can see all your notes and markups, which is neat. So you can have a highlight, and then you can have your comment on the highlight there. And a really neat thing is that up here, all these notes are searchable. So this is an example where I had read this book, and I was interested. He talked about various assessment models. So I knew I had highlighted the piece on this assessment model I was looking for. So I went to assessment, and it listed all my notes, and I could just scan through here, and oh, that was the one I wanted, and it jumped straight to the page. So a really, when the Kindle first came out a couple of years ago, a lot of complaints were made about, oh, it's not like having a textbook where I can highlight and flip back and do things like that. Now that it has all these notes as searchable, it's much, much more flexible. And in fact, I think I found it faster than I would have if it was a traditional textbook. So I was pretty pleased with that. Another way to take notes while you're reading is in programs like Read and Write Gold and Kurzweil, they have highlighting functions. So this is actually the Read and Write Gold highlighter. So I've used these four highlight buttons, and you get four different colors. So you can sort of be, you know, if you're doing a research paper and you're trying to find out, you know, the different species in different biomes, you can have green for forest land and red for desert and yellow for, okay, I'm running out of biomes, but whatever else you want, it's a tropical rainforest. And as you highlight, you go through the work and highlight it, and then you click on collect, and it groups all the green ones together, and then all the red ones together, and then all the yellow ones together. And you can then export that to a Word document so that you can have all your highlights together. So it's nice for studying. It's nice for research. You know, you could read a source, take all your highlights, chuck them in the Word document, record which source it was, and then save the document and move on to the next one. This would obviously be for older kids. We're using it in the high school in Churchill with a lot of success, and the middle school teachers are facilitating it a little more because they're being much more careful with which texts that they choose so that the texts are at an appropriate comprehension level, but it's been really useful for the kids to collect and store things that they want to research and use later. And it provides them with a really condensed version of what they were reading, so they don't have to go back and be overwhelmed by all the language when they're looking for details. Okay, moving on to output difficulties. Yep, someone has a hand up. You want to type a question in? Well, going. I'm just going to talk about the basic writing process that. Sorry?
I think the hand up might just be a leftover from
asked
the question a while ago.
All right, thank you. I just noticed it. Okay, so writing, basically LD kids have problems with all stages of the writing process. Organizing their writing, starting and finishing writing, editing and proofreading. So these are all part of the writing process. The biggest issue we see, and we see it from a pretty young age all the way through high school, unfortunately, is that basically most LD students do not like to write. So when they are forced to communicate in writing, their writing is short, they will do rudimentary revision, and they want it over with. So, you know, it's got to be used somewhat sparingly, and one of the things we try and do is to not have every project be a writing project. And sometimes you have projects where you value some things higher than others so that they're more motivated to do it. We have lots of projects where all they do is the first step and get their stuff organized, because that's the part they do the least. So we want them to have lots of practice with that. And their final product would be a sorted deck of flashcards or a web or something like that. So I'll be showing you some of those as we go through. Technology that can help with writing. So to get started writing, because a lot of them have sort of writing blocks, and get organized, just talking is easier than writing. So if they're doing sort of short answer homework, a lot of us will recommend that they, you know, use their smart pen, their smartphone, their iPad, even their computer, to just read the question and then talk their answer into the computer. And then when they're writing, they can just listen to what they said and sort of put it on paper, so they're not doing the thinking and the organizing of language as well as the physical act of writing all at the same time. It kind of breaks it up. So that's a really simple and often effective way to do it. It's also an interesting way for yourself to get a sense of, is what you're getting in writing really indicative of what they understand? So one day you can say, you know what, I just want you to record it on this iPad, record your answers for me, make a little podcast, and then I'll listen to it and give you a grade. Someone had just asked about OneNote. I'm not familiar with that unless you're talking about the iPad app. So I'll wait on that. So that can be a really good way to get a handle on whether the kid is really paring down his language for writing, choosing all the words that are easy to spell, and writing as little as possible, as opposed to when he talks and he tells you everything that you've ever told him about the subject. There are also some really cool visual organizers, both for the iPad and for the on the computer. And I'll show you a few screenshots of that so you get a sense of what that's like. The one here is the one on the iPad, and it's called iThoughts. And as you can see, it's sort of, this is a pretty complex mapping device. It's kind of tough for younger kids to use because it requires some pretty fine motor control. So we don't use that one with the younger kids. We tend to use Kidspiration, which is a fabulous product. You can see in this example, they are not even organizing words. They're organizing ideas. They've chosen pictures from the database that go with the different seasons. And then they could speak a story that talks about that, or a paper where they have a little blurb about each season. I think that, and then Inspiration is sort of a grown-up version of that, with a few less pictures, and their graphics are much more, you know, middle school and secondary school oriented. The other thing that both Kidspiration and Inspiration, which are by the same company, have that they let you do is there is a single button that you can click. Once you've created your sort of map here, you can click on a button and it turns it into a sort of outline for you, so it creates a linear piece that is sometimes much easier to turn into a paper for kids, because if they look at the web, they're like, oh, what do I start talking about first? But if you click on the outliner, it automatically organizes it into those categories and subcategories that you've created. So that's a really fun, and they gasp when it does that, so that's always fun too. We always tell kids, you cannot practice keyboarding enough. That will help your writing a ton because it's just a lot easier than handwriting. So get good at keyboarding. Dragon Dictate, Dragon Dictation, Dragon Naturally Speaking are all the same program, but they're for Mac, iPad, iPhone, or PC. They are a speech-to-text program, which sounds like a gift from the gods because the kids are like, I can talk and it'll write? That's amazing. The problem with that is you have to speak not in conversational language, you have to speak in more formal written language. And obviously, if you have a kid with a significant speech impairment or a strong accent, it has more trouble understanding that voice. If you are going to use it, I really recommend that you download there's a free app. The Dragon Dictation is a free app that you can get for the iPhone or the iPad. And it's not as robust as the one you pay money for, but it is, it's a good way to see if the kid is a good candidate for using this kind of technology. Read and Write Gold, using the text-to-speech at the end really helps kids spot the mistakes in their language. Most of our kids can hear mistakes much better than they can see mistakes. So just making them read it to you is really fabulous. And it also encourages them to add more detail because they hear it and they sort of hear that, oh, there should be more there. So that's good. Another thing that I'll show you a screenshot of in a minute is that it actually has a homophone spell checker. So it actually has, when it hits a there, it stops and says, are you sure this is the right one? This is what the different ones mean. And it will even read those items to you, to the kids. And I, once again, will make my plea to consider having a non-writing project. There are all sorts of great multimedia products and ideas out there. Movies, podcasts, voice threads, recorded speeches, even live speeches if they are willing to stand up in front of their peers. This is the homophone checker. So this is where they put this paper through and it spotted the word made. And it's saying, wait a minute, this is a homophone. Which one did you mean? And if you click on made, it gives you this definition. And you can, if you double click on it, it reads it to you. So they don't even need to read the definition. They can actually just click on it and hear what the definition is. The hard part about it is the kids really have to be taught how to use these things. I mean, we all, in Churchill, we all have our favorite spell check error stories. There was a research project we did on the American Revolution where we had the solders of the Revelation and the Declaration of Independence and all sorts of crazy things. And it's because they do regular spell check and they just click on the first word. So although spell check is a wonderful tool, the way LD kids spell, it does not always correctly identify what the word should be. So they need to learn to say, don't change sometimes if they're not sure, or they can wind up with gibberish. So if you can think of a spell checking game or something like that to just get them to focus on the fact that they can make as many mistakes with spell check as they can without it. And once you've clicked it to a real word, it won't help you anymore because it's not going to see it as a misspelled word. Before I go on to organizational difficulties, does anyone have questions about some of the writing products I talked about or want to comment on? Age groups or folks. We have used most of these technologies except for the ones I was specifically talking about, such as the highlighting tool is obviously not appropriate for the really young kids. Dragon Dictate is hard for very young kids because they just don't speak informal language. So, you know, they'll have fun talking and having it turn their words into gobbledygook. But other than that, we have really young kids recording things and taking pictures off the web. Kidspiration we use with sort of our first grade. Churchill really only starts at about a first grade level, so I don't have a lot of experience with very young kids. I do know that I hear you know, in all the chat rooms and everywhere that I look, that there is enormous buzz about the iPad and how it naturally interactive it seems to be for these young kids with, you know, good education apps, both in terms of developing fine motor coordination and OT skills, but also in terms of it's just so easy for them to poke and, you know, listen to a little movie about something, and they feel like they're in charge, as opposed to having to wait for someone to read to them or having to wait for someone, you know, to get into the computer, to log on to the movie, and then they can play it. So I would say if you were, for the younger kids, that's sort of the direction I see people moving, that's where I see the excitement. Though, of course, I think with the youngest kids, in some ways, you know, technology can help develop language and OT, but you also want them to be just using regular manipulatives and all those good things as well. And I think for the older kids, almost everything I've talked about, some of them, I mean, Kidspiration is probably the babiest toy I've shown you, and we have some of our high schoolers who don't want to grow up and use Inspiration. They want to stay with Kidspiration because they're used to it and they like the pictures. So I think most of the rest of it is being used for a lot. The school I'm at is the Churchill School and Center. It's actually in my bio on the, and it's in New York City. And it is what's called a non-public school, which means that it's a public school, but it's a site to which any public school in the New York City area can send students who are not meeting their goals in their school and who it is felt, usually by the parents, that it is an inappropriate setting. Most of our kids have IEPs, something like 80% of them, so the state actually pays for them to go to the school. Though it does require quite a bit of work on the parents' part to convince the state of this, typically. So we have some fairly profoundly learning disabled students, and it's K-12. In the high school, it is a one-to-one laptop program. In the middle school, there are laptop carts, and in the elementary school, laptop carts and iPad carts. And in the elementary school, there are also laptop carts and iPad carts. But it's pretty much a push-in model in all those rooms. So we have technology integrators that help teachers plan projects and help teachers execute projects. But there's not like a computer class. Yeah, we use smart boards. Great question. We use smart boards in all these classrooms. Some teachers go whole hog and use the Smart Notebook software. We kind of went backwards. We did high school, then middle school, then elementary school. Elementary school have had it for a couple of years now, and they love the interactivity of it. They do a lot of math activities with it and language activities. Because we have an Orton Gillingham reading program, it's like a virtual, you know, board with all the phonemes on it. So that's really fun for the kids. Smart boards take some training. I think probably the people who use it the least are the high school English teachers. And we've talked to a lot of people, and that's pretty much across the board, because you use it to show movies or clips, you use it to do some interactive games, but it's really not an enormous add-on to that particular skill set. Oh, one-to-one laptop program with smart boards, they socialize constantly. We've only had the one-to-one laptop program for 2 years, and the teachers have been astonished about how much more they can accomplish with the class, with the one-to-one laptop program. And it's not because it's all individual. It's because they have much more of kids looking over each other's shoulders and helping each other. Everyone wants to show what they're doing and how they're doing it. I would say it almost increases socialization in our population, possibly because it gives them something to talk about. So, you know, if they are socially awkward, They can be socially awkward but good at computers, and that gives them a role. I'm going to quickly get through organization because I want to get through that before we're done. So study skills and work habits, keeping your materials organized, organizing time and tracking events in your life. We all need to do this. And really, the tools that have come about are the ones that, you know, grown-ups created to help them keep track of all this stuff. And it's all going into the cloud. It keeps track of our digital data, and more of our data is digital. We can organize and coordinate schedules, due dates, all of that virtually, collaboratively. You can collaborate with others across platforms, countries, time zones, within class, talking about socialization. I'll talk about a few things that we've done with this. It's really easy to share class notes and have discussions that are not oral, so that kids who aren't comfortable speaking out can participate and sort of participate on a slower time frame, so they don't feel like they're struggling for their language. They can take their time. Google, obviously, is probably the best known. Windows Live has really come along in the last year, and, of course, iCloud, which actually, curiously, is the least functional because it doesn't really have the collaborative documents and everything like that, that it allows you to share stuff, but not in the way that, that Google and Windows Live does. So Google Documents and apps are one example of things we use. Shared calendars, either through iCal or Google Calendar, or Windows Live has a calendar function. Our school website is, we do a, between a combination of Google and our school website, where a lot of homework and resources are posted, is something the kids use a lot. We've used blogs for different projects. That is one thing that the English teachers love. And we use the Smart Pen and LiveScribe site. So Google Docs, if you're not familiar with it, is an amazing program. If you are on a budget, this is basically, you can do everything you can in Word plus some. Because you can create documents, you can create presentations, which are slideshows. It has a spreadsheet that's pretty powerful for, if you were, you know, working on Wall Street, it's not enough. Forms are actually a way to do surveys or quizzes and collect the results. It has a drawing tool. A table tool is, as they say, beta. And collection is how you collect your forms. But it stores all your documents. You can search them. They're all listed here. You can gather them in collections, so you can keep them organized. You can share them. So if you click on a document, couldn't do all these screenshots, but once you click on a document, there's a button up here that says share, and then you see this window, and you can add people down here, and you can tell them whether they're able to edit, whether their owner like I was, or you can have them be view only, and so they can just see it. You can also allow them, a new feature is you can allow them to make comments. So a student can share with a teacher. And a teacher, what many of our teachers now do is they'll have a writing period where the students are writing in class, and they're all on their computers, the teacher's on her computer, and they all share their documents with her, and she can flick from document to document and quickly read through and ask, like, that critical question right as they're in the writing process and guide them. Yeah. And Google Docs work on iPads, they work on smartphones, they work in a lot of different places. So we've had, you know, some of our teachers who are really into it, they'll go on their computer at night and see what kids are working on their writing, and they'll jump on and comment. And the kids are like, oh my gosh. So it allows for that kind of collaboration. And kids share documents with each other and create collaborative documents. This is my family calendar. I could not live without this tool. This is my son, my older son. This is my younger son. Which one's mine? This is our full family calendar. So all of my kids can see my calendar, and I can see all of their calendars, and we can all add to it. So if my son has a dentist appointment after school, I can add it. And then I can have a reminder that pops up on his phone 20 minutes before the dentist appointment, so he has time to get to the dentist, because I'm working, so I'm not there. Thank you, Amy, for posting that. I forgot, but yes. And it, the other thing that Google Docs does, as well as this automatic save, is you can, on any document, you can click and see the changes that have been made to a document. Often what we want to try and capture is what did the kid do initially and how much did they go back and change. And you can really track that in Google Docs in a you know, it's color-coded. So you can really see what they did initially, what your comments back to them were, how they were able to incorporate those comments. It's really powerful. This is a shot of Live Scribes Pencast community, and they have everything from hilarious jokers to a woman who's created a whole course on how to learn Chinese with the audio and the drawings and the Chinese letters. There's also one of our teachers has been posting, and there's several math teachers that do this, post examples of how to work through different types of problems. So they'll be talking through how to solve the problem while they're writing it down, so the kids can click on it and actually have that guidance, you know, in the friendly, familiar voice of their teacher going through what they saw in class that day. And that is really powerful. Also, when they go on to a more mainstream school or college, if they have a buddy that has a smart pen, they can get notes and audio from them, which can be really nice. Well, we don't have a ton of time, but I'll quickly run through this. So iPhones, touches, Droids, BlackBerry, smartphones. You can carry a lot of books in them. They're personal organizers. Almost all this Google Doc calendar stuff, totally can do it on a phone. Has a lot of helpful study apps. They have little flashcard apps. They have, you know, different companies have created different, you know, you can get an AP European history app that, like, quizzes you on different periods. You can use them to record audio, which is really useful. You can text notes to yourself to remind you to do your homework. Obviously, they have a calendar. You can check your email. Audiobooks can also travel on there. They're not good for extended typing. No matter how good they are at texting, writing a 10-page paper on a phone is not a good idea. Dragon dictation apps exist for almost all of these guys so that they can dictate something. And the other thing that I didn't have here that I was brainstorming with a teacher is they can also take quick little movies. So if a teacher is working out a problem on a blackboard or a chart, they could just turn on the movie and record the teacher doing that so that they have that live example to refer to. The iPad has a lot of stuff. It has text-to-speech for everything but PDFs, and even some of them work. You saw the note-taking app. What is really happening now, and it just has broken in the last 2 weeks, is that Apple has cut a deal with two of the major textbook publishers, and so the iPad will be the only place you're going to be able to get these interactive, phenomenal textbooks. They have also released an app that you can use on your computer and create these textbooks. And it is like a click and drop kind of app so that, you know, if you can use a word processor, you can create these textbooks. So this is enormously powerful for teaching an LD population because you can really customize your content at a level that they can understand. So that's really new. It was just released at the last Apple conference, which was 2 weeks ago. iPod MP3 players are still useful. You can record your class lectures. You can take little audio notes to yourself. And audiobooks and podcasts are very useful tools. We talked about the smart pen. It really has, it's very flexible because it can be really simple or it can be very complex and interactive. So I kind of like it that way. So, Judith, can we open it for questions? That was like breakneck speed.
Shannon, you have remarkable time management skills. At one point I was wondering, is she going to finish? But you really figured out. That was very impressive. It's now 9 o'clock.
Get the wire as it turned 9.
Yeah, that's very, very impressive. Thank you so much. What an informative, practical presentation with lots of humor and great examples, but also a lot of really useful information. Just a little bit of housekeeping before we open up the phone lines. Everyone will be receiving an evaluation survey in your email. Please fill it out. That's what I mentioned earlier. Please fill it out. It really does help us plan. You can register for upcoming webinars on the screen just came up now, upcoming webinars on the Hidden Sparks website. And again, tonight's session within the next 24 hours will be up on the Hidden Sparks Without Walls website, and you can download both the PowerPoint and the audio for use whenever you feel like you would like to do that. And remember, fill out the survey and return it. And I'm noticing lots of thank yous in the chat room. And yeah, Shannon, thank you so much. If there are people who are interested in asking a question over the phone, please click on the hand raise sign, and Betsy will open up your phone line. We'll do it one at a time so that we don't get a big rush of noise. Click on your hand icon, and we can open up your phone line so that you can ask your question directly to Shannon if you don't want to type it in. And again, up on this slide right here is Shannon's contact information as well as Hidden Sparks contact information. If you have follow-up questions, I'm sure Shannon would be happy to address them to from her email.
Absolutely.
We have a hand raised. Ruth Schreier's hand is up. Betsy.
Ruth, I'm unmuting your phone right now.
Yeah, oh, great.
You should go ahead.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah.
Hello? You can hear me.
Hi.
Okay. Yeah, thank you so much. This was really wonderful. I have. Do you ever do anything either at the Churchill School in the summer where you actually do hands-on, where we actually could bring in, or you have the material, technology where we could actually learn? By doing?
I could absolutely speak with Jane Gertler, who runs the summer sessions. And if I, you know, because I know we've done sessions for Hidden Sparks in the past.
Right.
See if that would be possible. So maybe that's a conversation, you know, Betsy, Judith, and Jane and I could have. That's a great idea. That would be a great follow-up to this.
Oh, thank you so much. And again, I really appreciate it. Very informative.
Great. Thank you.
Thanks, Ruth.
Thanks.
Betsy Butya also has her hand raised.
Batya, you can go ahead and speak.
I actually missed it. I just went on now and I said, oh, my goodness. Is there any way to, is it going to be available on computer for those who missed it? I signed up, but I just sat down and I said, oh, my goodness.
Yeah, you go by tomorrow night, Betsy?
Mm-hmm.
By tomorrow night, if you go to the Hidden Sparks website and click into the archives of Hidden Sparks Without Walls, you'll be able to both see the PowerPoint and listen to the audio alongside, as if you were listening to it tonight. You can also download it to your computer to listen to it at any point.
Thank you very much.
No problem.
Sorry you missed it. Life gets in the way.
Does it ever. Okay, it looks like there are no more hands raised.
Okay, thank you, everyone.
But
this was actually
Shannon,
my first webinar, so it was fun.
Oh, wait, there is a question actually being typed in. Is there a website with samples of lesson plans using technology?
There are lots. I don't know if I included it in the notes. Betsy, maybe if I forwarded you a couple of sites.
Mm-hmm.
You could add them to the notes at the
sure.
end of the PowerPoint.
Sure.
I mean, Kathy Schrock's blog is amazing. And I've got a couple of others at school, but I don't know the, you know, URL off the top of my head. So let me get that information to Betsy, and then it'll be available if you download the PowerPoint. The last three or four pages are just all links to all these resources.
I have a specific question, actually, Shannon. Someone asked earlier
yep.
about ages.
Yep.
What are your thoughts on keyboarding? What's an appropriate age for kids to start learning to keyboard? You know,
who struggle
possibly with graphomotor?
What we have done, there is a specific, and it's an old, completely research-based program that is actually phonetically based. So if you have kids who are struggling with reading, and they're probably also struggling with writing, no doubt, there's a program called Read, Write, and Type. And it's available as a like online subscription, and it walks kids. You can take. We've done it with kids as young as like 6 or 7. If you know, because it actually provides them with, you know, Orton Gillingham style phonemic reinforcement as they're learning to type. So it doesn't say type B; it says type B, and then you type
at,
and then you type T, and then you type B at. And then you type at, and then you make a story about the fat bat. And it's a genius program, and it was developed, I think, about probably 20 years ago, and they finally got it available on the web. So if you have a younger kid who's really struggling, that's absolutely an appropriate tool.
Okay.
Otherwise, really more like 9 or 10.
Okay, great. And there is another question about the
lesson
website with samples in Hebrew.
Lesson plans in Hebrew. The place I've seen the most Hebrew is the Smart Pen. One of the things I didn't talk about the Smart Pen is that you can have apps in the Smart Pen, and they're basically like little pencasts or podcasts, and they're also available on the LiveScribe site. So that would be a place that has, I mean, and I'm sure a lot of it is learning to read Hebrew and speak Hebrew, but I think that might be a useful place to start, because I've seen a great deal of material there. If you go to the livescribe.com site and click on their apps, you'll see what I'm talking about.
Okay. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
One last call if there are any questions. I don't think there are any more hands. No more hands raised. Shannon, thank you so much. This was just phenomenal. Such a rich resource.
Thank you.
I think for both beginner and people who are more experienced. Thank you. This is going to be talked about and spread around people. So thanks.
Okay, good. All right. Okay. And feel free if you read the notes later and have other questions, feel free to email me.
Okay.